My name is Will, and I, like Mulder from The X-Files, want to believe. So I've embarked on a journey of discovery. I've talked to people deeply entrenched in the spiritual and metaphysical worlds. I've thrown myself into weird and wonderful experiences. I've even joined a coven of witches, all in the interest of finding something, anything, that will prove that there's something beyond this physical, three-dimensional world we all live in. This is The Skeptic Metaphysician. Hey everyone, thanks for joining in again on this episode of Skeptic Metaphysician. Now, most of the time, these intros take a minute to explain the topic and why we're covering it, but today, we're diving into astrology. And come on, everyone knows what that is. So I'm going to spare you the burden of having to listen to me talk about horoscopes and signs and all that, and instead, introduce you to my fabulous guest. She describes herself as a conscious media journalist and spiritual counselor, and just so happens to be an expert in astrology. So without further ado, I'm thrilled to welcome Jasmine Kyleen to the show. Jasmine, so psyched to have you on the show today.
Hello, hello. I'm so grateful to be here. You have no idea. Thank you for having me.
No. The grateful one should be me, because you and I met a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the fact that maybe you might be able to do a chart, astrological chart on me, which is something I've always been interested in, but never actually had done. So this will be really interesting for at least me. Hopefully everyone else will find it interesting. Because we could talk about astrology and what it means and how it works and all that kind of stuff. Right. So, but before we get started, I have to ask, what is a conscious media journalist?
Excellent question. I think a beautiful one to start with. Well, I mean, the thing is, I studied multimedia journalism in school, and I minored in sociology, and I thought that I would go into entertainment journalism and I would talk about, you know, musicians and artists and actors. But I found that, you know, throughout my own evolution, that would probably be, it would lead to a life less fulfilling. So I've decided to take sort of like this curiosity that I have into the realm of conscious media, right? So I love to learn about, I guess, just everything that falls under, right? I think, you know, metaphysics and spirituality and what it means to be human and this journey that we're on. I think it's a beautiful thing to explore, and especially to explore out loud with each other. So that's kind of the world that I work in.
Wow, that is fantastic. Do you mind if I steal that? Because that is like the perfect descriptor for what we're trying to do here, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Totally. We're on the same path.
That's fantastic. Now, I did a little bit of research into you, and your your credentials are impressive, right? And starting with TV Guide magazine, I mean, all these kinds of, and if you're listening to the show now and you want to Google Jasmine, her name is Jazmin.
Yes.
You should absolutely do that, because she has a fascinating trajectory. But that's not why you. No, thank you. Really, I can't tell you how grateful I am to have you on the show. So let's go ahead and dive into the topic, astrology, right? Mm-hmm. So what is, I mean, everyone knows, right? Everyone picks up the newspaper and they read their horoscope on a daily basis or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to it than just that, right? So can you give us a lowdown, a rundown on what astrology actually is?
Absolutely. And there's so many different ways that, you know, one can interpret it. And there's arguments whether, like, is this a science or is this a pseudoscience? And how I describe it is, it's the dance that we do with the cosmos. It's our astrological DNA blueprint. It has everything to do with where were the planets, the stars, where were the constellations aligned when you were born? And how does that affect the way that you relate to yourself, the way that you relate to the external, and just like the dance that you do throughout life? You know, it's never, I think people misinterpret it, or they'll use horoscopes to, you know, will my husband leave me on the 4th of June? Like, it's right. Not, obviously it can be used, you know, for predictive purposes, but rather I think it's this way to sort of get to know yourself on a deeper level and get to know your strengths and your weaknesses and your inclinations. And I think use that to empower you. So I try to use astrology as a tool of empowerment.
Great. You've got a great way with words. That's very specific, a descriptor of astrology. I've always seen it as, so I'm not sure if I personally believe it foretells your future. Right. I've never used it in that way, just because I can't see how that would work. But I have found that it really gives you, or it gives me, a pretty good thumbnail of someone's personality. So I can kind of know what to expect in the interactions.
Definitely.
But of course, we'll get into moons and planets and suns and stuff like that. But
yes.
there's a lot more. Everyone knows their astrological sign as the sun sign, right? I'm a Gemini and you are right. Whatever. But yeah. There's so much more to it than that. And so people say, yeah. So this is not exactly, they read the horoscope or they read their astrological sign and the descriptors, and they say, well, that's not really, there's a lot of things that are like me, but there's so many things that are not. And a lot of people say it's because A, it's a lot of malarkey, which is not truly the case, right? But some people think it's because it's upbringing and where you grew up and all that kind of stuff. And that probably has a lot to do with it. But there's so many other factors, right? You have your moon and your rising sign and your planets and stuff. So let's get into that kind of thing. What, more than just a sun sign,
yes.
What is there that people should know about astrology that decides or defines who someone is?
Absolutely. There's so many factors. So thank you for bringing that up, because I think people do get discouraged when they'll read a horoscope for like the sign of Leo. And they're like, I'm nothing like this. I'm less boisterous and I'm more calm. And the thing is that, yes, nature versus nurture is absolutely a factor, but your sun sign is just, it's one element to your identity. You know, you have your moon sign, which rules your emotional world. You have your ascendant, which rules kind of how you show up in the world. Your Mercury, which rules how you think. So there are so many elements that make up a person, because we are complex beings, as we know. And so to not take the time to be intentional with looking into that will make your relationship with astrology kind of subpar, I think.
Iffy, right? So and that's what makes people go, huh? Now, I've actually physically heard, I mean, I know people who you're going to talk to someone about astrology? I mean,
people are very skeptical, yeah.
And actually, Wikipedia actually describes astrology as a pseudoscience, which is kind of insulting in a way to people who actually practice astrology, right?
I'm sure for many, yeah. I just think whoever it's meant to find, it will find. And the people who are skeptical probably have something in their chart that would be indicative of that. You know what I mean? So right, just, yeah, right. There's room for all of us.
Right. Out of all the topics that we've discussed on this show, astrology seems to be the one that people go, they're the most skeptical about for some reason. They just think, there's no way that the positioning of someone's, of a planet is going to actually affect who I am as a person when I was born or things like that. So.
Right. Totally. Rightfully so. I get it.
We've talked a lot about the show about how science can explain a lot, but sometimes in the metaphysical world, the advent of quantum physics now has put a lot of questions into what really is real, what's not, what can be explained, what can't be, and why. So the goal of this show is to come into it with a skeptical mindset, but with an open mind to understand how all these things work, and then let the listener make their own determination.
Absolutely. And I think that I think it's important for us to practice self, just like autonomy. But I will say that a lot of people who meet astrology with skepticism are sort of basing that perception of it off of what the mainstream has made astrology to be. Quick horoscopes and little parts of magazines where you can read and be like, what will this week say? There's so much more depth to what astrology is and the relationship with astronomy. Yeah, so just I would invite anyone to open themselves up to look into their charts and kind of see past, you know, what is your sun sign? And I think you'll find that there's so much accuracy in it.
We're going to dive a little bit into my chart in a second.
Yes.
I do want to let the audience know that my first thought was to have all kinds of people's signs be sent to me so that Jasmine can talk about what their personality traits were, things are, what they're, that kind of, what does a Cancer, what's a Cancer like? What's a Scorpio like?
Right.
But I didn't want to put you on the spot. So I gave you my birth date and my birthplace and my time of birth. Mm-hmm. And that's really all you needed to do my chart, right?
That's all you need. And I didn't look at it until maybe like 30 minutes before we started, just to have a glimpse. And you've got some work in you.
Oh, that's such a perfect way of explaining it. Right. So yeah, I am definitely a creature of incredible dichotomy. So I'm really curious to find out what you found about me. Before we dive into that, I know that there are different types of signs, right? Is it fire signs, water signs, air signs? What are the differences?
All the elements in water. Yeah. They're elemental. So they're ruled by different elements that you would find on Earth. So Earth signs typically are like the group, you know, Virgo, Taurus and Capricorn, and they are ruled by the Earth. So there's an element of them that is very grounded, that is very present, that is very sort of on Earth and not sort of floating in the ethers like an air sign, Gemini, Libra, or Aquarius, like myself would be. And water signs are much more emotional, Scorpio, Cancer, Pisces. They're ruled by their emotion. They're ruled by the ocean. Then the fire signs are kind of the ones that get stuff started, Leo, Aries, Sagittarius. And so, there's there's a dance that they all do with each other. And I think there's an element that is found a lot through astrology, which is balance, right? It's not sort of finding a way to anchor yourself in any end of the spectrum, but rather finding the balance and the duality within yourself.
Okay. So I'm a Gemini. I was born in June.
You are.
And so can you tell me what are the typical characteristics of a Gemini?
So your sun sign is Gemini for sure, which is like whenever we present ourselves of like what I am, it's what you're referring to your sun sign, because it's kind of like the first thing that people are met with. And a Gemini sun, Gemini being ruled by Mercury, which is the planet that rules sort of the mind and communication, how we process information. There's something that is very cerebral about a Gemini. There's an innate curiosity about any and everything, a charm, just an innate way of being charismatic that I think a lot of people would work towards that comes a bit more naturally and innately to a Gemini. And I think sort of like why people, there is in the astrology world a lot of like stigma around like Geminis, like don't trust them. But it's because you have so many different layers to you that people can be met with different ones at different times. And people find it hard to sort of pin down who a Gemini is, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. People tell me I'm a different person every time they meet me. And I claim it. A regular listener to the show will recognize differences in my intonation and the way I speak to people. And I feed off of someone else's energy. So if it's high energy, I give that back. If it's low energy, I tend to be more subdued. I try to tell people that Geminis do have two sides. My two sides is one is incredibly outgoing and energetic and out there. And the other side is very shy and quiet and socially anxious and things like that. So those are my two sides. It's not like good and evil. It's just
Totally. And what's funny, and there's more in your chart that's real indicative of a bit of like a tug of war between being seen and sort of hibernating and what is more concealed. And the reasoning why is because in astrology, we have our signs, right? So we have planets that are in certain signs, but those planets and those signs, right? So a sun in Gemini will fall into a certain house. And that house will tell you, if the planet in the sign tells you an energy, whatever that falls into in a house will tell you how that energy is expressed. So of course, looking into your chart, yes, you have a sun sign in Gemini, which is, you know, just so expressive and so curious, explorative, and all of those beautiful things. But it falls into the eighth house, which the eighth house, and let me know when I'm like, okay, girl, you're getting very convoluted.
No, I just found it funny because when you said the eighth house, your eyes went really big. So I'm really curious to find out what that means. But you can speak as esoterically as you want, and I will always say, huh? And really bad things so you can understand me. That, so.
I try to make it digestive as possible for like my clients too. So I'm pretty used to it. But I will say that the eighth house, the sun is a little bit in detriment in this house. And this is because the eighth house rules what is taboo, what is concealed, what people typically don't really want to look at, right? So like death, sex, and rebirth, and crime, and mortality. So I say all that to say that I think it's actually a strength to have your sun in this house, because this is indicative of someone who is able to take these things that people don't really want to look at and to sort of face them head on, face them really bravely, and even make them part of your identity, right? So I think the fact that you have this role that you have sort of exploring what people don't typically want to go past the basics of makes so much sense for someone with a sun in the eighth house, for sure.
I thought that you were, when you talked about taboo subjects such as death and sex and rebirth, I thought you were going to say something along the lines of, I'm a deviant who's afraid of being killed, or I'm about to go out and commit murder or something. So I'm glad that it was more benign than that.
So. Yeah. I mean, that could show up in other parts for sure. You got some sick house stuff. But eighth house just means that the sun likes to be seen and the eighth house likes to be hidden. So there probably is a bit of like a tug of war between how much do I want to be seen and how uncomfortable does that also make me, you know?
Yeah. No, that explains me to a T. Like I just mentioned, there are two sides of me, one that's very, very out there and one is very, very quiet and solitary.
Mm-hmm.
So you have said all kinds of wonderful things about Geminis.
Yes.
Right. But I know from firsthand experience that there are some negative connotations that come with every sign. So in terms of a Gemini, what should I maybe be aware of or be careful about
right.
When it comes to my sun sign?
Totally. Well, yeah. So I do my best not to subscribe too much to duality. I think, you know, good and bad, everything just is what it is. But I will say, like, the more difficult parts to deal with when it comes to having a sun sign in Gemini will definitely be, I think, this element of commitment, right? I think a lot of people can sort of place expectation on a Gemini, and the Gemini wakes up feeling differently than they did yesterday. They're going to act differently than they did yesterday. That means that maybe I don't want to honor that commitment. Maybe I don't want to continue showing up to something. They are so, a beautiful part about them is that they're so interested in so many different things at once that at times they can have this habit of sort of starting a project here and starting a project there and starting a project there and then just kind of leaving a couple of things with some loose ends undone and going on to whatever, like, they're just what's igniting them in that given moment. So I think finding structure and anchoring yourself and whatever, like, grounding and committing looks like is something to be intentional about, for sure.
Well, that's a really nice way of saying that I'm flighty. So thank you.
Yes. Same though. So I get it. Yeah,
but you nailed it right on, right? So I've always told everyone that I'm a builder. I love to build projects and hand them off to someone to execute. So that's, yes. And that's what I do for a living. Right. Mm-hmm. So it actually goes directly in with what you're talking about. So that's perfect.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
So we've teased it, we've touched on it, we've talked about it a little bit. So let's just get into it. Let's just dive into it. Talk to me. Who am I?
Who are you? You, oh my gosh. Well, you're very led by air. So I will say, because you have your sun sign, your moon sign, and your ascendant sign, which are your big three, as they call in astrology, in air signs, which means that there's something that is just so explorative about you, something that wants to go really deep. And there's more parts of your chart that are indicative of that, and I'll definitely get into them. But what I will say is that you have your moon sign and your ascendant sign in Libra, which means how you feel. You know, the moon rules your emotional world, and the ascendant sign, which is your rising sign. So kind of the cloak that you wear when you enter social situations, who you are when you show up in the world, are both Libra, which is, I think, you know, Libra is ruled by the scales, right? So there's always a sense of balance, a sense of justice, a sense of fairness and equity that you abide by. And it's also, like, I would say, if there's a name to give, like, a Libra moon or rising, it would be like the mediator. Like, you kind of like to be the middle ground. Like, I understand this perspective. I understand this perspective. How can I fuse them together and sort of be that bridge? And Libras get along with literally any and everyone. There's not a single group or version of a person or gender that you have any sort of disdain for. You can find connection and compatibility with literally any and everything. And if there were to be, like, a converse side to that, Libras really like pretty things. So at times there may be, it's crazy because so much of your chart is indicative of someone who goes so in depth with everything that they do. I would assume it's pretty hard for you to, like, abide by surface level because of how deep you have the capability of going emotionally. But a Libra does like things that are shiny and new and will kind of maybe get distracted by that. And especially, like, in loving relationships, there is that idea of, like, consistent infatuation. And I think it's a beautiful thing to dance with. A lot of, like, for example, Kim Kardashian is a Libra sun, you know, like, she's known for beauty sort of being at the forefront. So know that you appreciate pleasure and beauty. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yes. I think it's probably dead on. And there is, to your point earlier on, there is a sense of routines or a set things in place that allow me to maintain my groundedness.
Yes. Yes.
Which counterbalances that flightiness and that social butterfly, in all cases, personality that's really intrinsic in me.
Totally. Yeah. And you're just a very multi-layered being, I will say. And I was curious to know what your relationship with routine was, because, you know, in astrology, we have the sixth house, which is ruled, or rather it rules, you know, routine and discipline in our daily tasks and also our health. And you have Saturn and Chiron there. So those are both planets that indicate, I wouldn't say strife, but sort of, like, more difficult sort of karmic work to get through. So anytime I see a placement like that, it's either indicative of someone who abides by routine so deeply that it's hard for them to get out of it, or it's very difficult for them to sort of, like, cement themselves in a routine or to maintain discipline with, like, I'm maintaining my health. I am doing this thing at every single day, at every single time. So have you ever, like, had that relationship with routine?
Yes. In fact, if I don't have a routine, nothing gets done. I have to have a routine that I follow. And in fact, my routine, and people who've listened to the show know, my routine is I wake up in the morning, I drink my coffee. I meditate. I read a passage from some of the books that I'm into. I post some inspirational things on social media as a way for me to get affirmations out there.
Right.
And then only then can I, you know, fill my own cup before I can then go into the world and fill others. Right. So
beautiful. I've got to do that. Yeah. So that's definitely, yeah, that Saturn in that sixth house is going to make sure that, like, if I'm okay, it's because I'm following some sort of structure. And anytime that placement does come up, it's important to note, are you putting in and allotting time to also be like free of structure, if that makes sense? Like, am I also allotting in time for play?
It does, 100%. And in fact, I was going to say it's counterintuitive to people who typically see Geminis as people who buck any kind of routine because they can't be tied down. And honestly, yes, that is, I mean, in a perfect world, I would be free as a bird and doing whatever the whim of the day is. But I have a career, I have a family, I've got responsibilities I've got to stick to. So I've developed these routines to make sure I stick to my responsibilities.
Right? Exactly.
Now you mentioned something that I can't let pass because as far as I know, there's only 9 planets if you count Pluto, right? But you said Chiron and you mentioned Chiron as a planet. Maybe I'm just too old to know. Is this a new thing that was found?
No. So Chiron isn't a planet, but it's in your sixth house. Chiron is an asteroid. The story of Chiron comes from Greek mythology, which is known as like the wounded healer. And in essence, it's like the ways that we can show up for people, it's more difficult to show up for ourselves. So Chiron showing up in your sixth house just means that, especially Chiron usually rules like what happens earlier in our lives as well. So if there was at any point in your life where you felt like I'm really taking on a caretaker role, I am really doing everything that I can to maintain either someone else's health or someone else's well-being or like a collective sense of well-being that I'm not also pouring into myself, then a lot of lesson throughout life is, am I making sure that I'm taking care of myself and finding balance between how I show up for others and how I, you know, also reciprocate that own care for myself.
Whoa. This is the first time I've ever heard of an asteroid showing up on an astrological chart. That's it makes sense. It's a heavenly body that was in place at a certain time that you were born or whatever, and it imprinted upon me the stuff.
Yeah.
And what you're saying in the sixth house, it all tracks. Really
beautiful.
Well,
so. I love that. Yeah. So we can go to like the closer planets, the more inner planets to not get so out there. I think another beautiful planet that I wanted to point out was your Mercury, right? So we have our sun, our moon, and our Mercury. And our Mercury rules the mind, right? It's how we communicate, how we process emotion and process information. And you have that in the sign of Cancer, which means that sometimes when you communicate, it can come from an emotional space rather than a logical space, which I think is a beautiful way to navigate life, right? Being led by how we feel rather than like rationalizing every single thing. But it's also, you know, Cancer is ruled by the moon. So there's this sense of home. There's a sense of nurture. There's a sense of like intricate care that you have for your loved ones. And what I think is the most beautiful is that it shows up in your ninth house, which anytime I see a Mercury in ninth house, I'm like, you need to either be a shaman or some sort of like motivational speaker or someone that takes some form of leadership role within philosophy and spirituality, because that's what the ninth house rules. The ninth house rules greater knowledge. It rules philosophical themes, religious themes, and it also rules travel. So a Mercury in ninth house, it means that there's a lot of knowledge and a lot of identity that you gain when you are traveling and when you are seeing new things and allowing yourself to experience new cultures, new people, new environments. So definitely making sure that like your body is out there. But ultimately it means that the way you process information is through the lens of philosophy. There is no way that you can go deeper to things. There's no way that you can't like pick apart themes and ideas. You have to. And the way that you do it is so innate, so seamless. It would only make sense for you to assume some sort of role of leadership within leading people through how they want to look at the world philosophically.
You are blowing my mind. Okay, so when people are talking about astrology, oh, they say that the biggest hit is, oh, it's so vague. It could be, it could pertain to anybody, but you're talking really specific things that hit right at the center of who I am, which is blowing my mind. So
totally.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's the thing. Like, for example, I could say, you know, you're so, you know, gregarious because you have a Gemini sun, but if you don't go actually into your chart and don't, you know, realize like, oh, but that sun is in the eighth house, which means there could be some restriction in the way that you express yourself because of the fact that the themes you love at times could be heavy. So like, if you get into your chart specifically, you can find such intricate detail and really go into depth about just who you are and why you are the way that you are and how you can use certain tools to strengthen you and certain things that you want to work on deeper, you know?
Wow. Okay.
We can keep going. I wanted to say that.
Yeah, I'm glad that we took a pause because I do need to kind of absorb some of this information. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect you to nail me quite so completely, quite so soon and quickly. Just by having the three bits of information I gave you. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and keep going because
okay, cool.
I can't imagine what else you could tell me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, there's so much. And I will say that you're exactly where you are meant to be because so Neptune is an outer planet. I'll get more into the inner planets, but I want to note that Neptune is an outer planet, which essentially rules like, and it's so funny because so much of your chart is indicative of like the metaphysical. And Neptune is exactly that. It rules just spirituality, out there themes, the esoteric, and just anything that can't really be understood easily, you know, like just basically what is boundless and what's limitless. And you have that in your first house. So the first house being the first house, it rules your identity. It rules kind of how you show up in the world and who people know you as. So to have that larger than life planet within your first house means a lot of different things. It means that you can be someone who is a little bit daydreamy, a little bit imaginative. And some people have to be like, hey, like, are we thinking rationally here? Like, are we right back on Earth? And
so we're back to flighty.
Yeah. Sometimes that placement can also not struggle, but have a relationship with like escapism. Like mental escapism, like if I can't physically go, I'm kind of just going to mentally go there. But it also means that there's such an intimate relationship with the things that people just don't really understand what's taboo. And that can maybe often bleed into someone growing up feeling a little bit misunderstood, feeling like they see beyond what others see and feeling like they kind of have to like shrink themselves in order to fit what like would make most people comfortable. But growing into purpose means growing into the fact that that is your purpose. Like the fact that you were able to make, to be that bridge, right? That Libra, the bridge between the 5D and the 3D, to understand these large themes in such a human way and to dedicate and have discipline in the way that you relate to them is so much of what you're supposed to be presenting to the world. So I look at you and I'm like, oh, you're so in alignment with what purpose is for you, honestly. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like that?
I do. In fact, a story that I tell my friends all the time is the time where I was much younger and my mother and my father kept saying, just get a job. And I refused to because I always told them, I need to find something that I love to do. I just can't just decide, just pick up a job just for the sake of the job. So I'm going to stick to my guns much, much later on in years. I just had my mom here visiting for the first time because of the pandemic, the first time in a couple of years, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And she turned to me, she said, Will, and she shared the story to my family, which was great. She said, you were right. You were right to hold out because now I see your life, you're purpose driven. You're enjoying what you do. And I tell everybody what I do is not work. I play for a living. It's fantastic. So it does fit perfectly.
Well, I have to say that is so much of the secret to unlock your chart because of the fact that the 10th house rules career. It rules how we experience success, how we build a platform in this world. And you have Venus and Jupiter there, right? So let me look and see what sign Venus is in for you. Venus is in the sign of Leo for you. I love this placement. If anyone is like looking for just like an ideal companion, I would tell them to look for a Venus in Leo because there's something that's so like, look at my partner about that placement. So a sense of play, a sense of there will always be something childlike in the way that you relate to just other people in relationships and how you express love will always have a sense of just childlike nature, not in an immature sense, but rather in a playful sense. And so, but also I think everyone knows that Leos are they have an assertive sense of self, right? They understand that they are deserving of being seen. And you have that Venus in Leo in your 10th house, which is success, career, how we experience sort of prosperity. And you have that alongside Jupiter, which is a planet of abundance. So I say all of that to say this placement is indicative of you find success when you are making sure that what comes first and foremost is love, love of what you're doing, love of the fulfillment that it comes alongside, and just like love of life. And within that, there is sometimes with Saturn in that sixth house, there is an attachment to like doing things rationally and maybe, you know, satisfying what makes more earthly sense, right? Like maybe consistency and structure is worth, you know, the forfeit of my own, you know, joy. But that Venus and Jupiter are saying like how you find consistency and structure is by honoring joy. So know that by taking those steps that are led by body, you are always going to find some form of success for sure. And another thing that I wanted to mention is that in our, well, do you want to comment on that at all before?
No, I'm glad that you clarified not immature.
Like, no.
So thank you for that. No, but go ahead. Yeah. I'm fascinated.
Totally. Cause sometimes I think Leos can be looked at through an immature lens, but I think that they're just, I think we are almost created to think that someone who abides by a life of play is immature. And I think that if anything, they have it more figured out than we do. But so a north node, how that shows up, a north node is sort of like an angle in our chart. And I always call it like the North Star. So it's what we're going towards. It's what we're supposed to build towards. But if you have a north node, that means you have a south node. And that south node is kind of like our comfort zone. So where we can choose to stay if we don't really want to, you know, grow in life and if we're more comfortable with stagnancy. And so your north node is in your seventh house, which is the house of marriage, and it's the house of relationships. And it's the house of basically just, you know, how we relate to people outside of us, which means that that south node was in your first house, which is the house of self. What that means in a digestive manner is that your comfort zone may have been in how you related to yourself, and knowing that like, as long as, and especially because a Gemini is so independent, that you may have found a lot of comfort in simply kind of doing things independently, doing things on your own, and living not a life of solitude or isolation at all, actually, because of the fact that Geminis are so sociable, but rather that like at the end of the day, if only I have to take care of myself, I'm good. And so much of life's purpose for you, if you follow your North Star, which I feel like you absolutely have, is finding that balance between others and yourself and really building a life and a family where you show up authentically and where you are challenged to forfeit a little bit of like the time that you would pour into yourself and know that it's almost more fulfilling to grow through that. So does that make sense for you at all?
It does. It makes a huge amount of sense. And everything that you're saying is really complimentary. And I mean, it's lovely and it's wonderful.
Do you want me to say bad thing?
Well, not necessarily a bad thing, but for example, in the past year-ish or so, I've done a lot of self-reflection and I've found some things within myself that I'm not real thrilled with, that I'm actively taking steps to correct. I have lived really my entire life very ego-driven, very judgmentally. I'm really trying to be more connected with the soul path than I have been in the past. I've made some very dire mistakes that have almost cost me everything. I've learned from them. But what makes that happen? What would start my life path so negatively only to be confronted with this like reality of you're screwing up, fix it, and then suddenly be so committed to fixing things?
Oh my gosh. Well, you have a couple of things that would indicate that. And I think, honestly, if we go back to that sun in that eighth house, right? What is hidden has so much to do with our identity. And I think that sometimes the eighth house is a heavier house that people don't want to look at because it also rules inheritance. It rules money. And sometimes like money sort of being at the forefront rather than deep purpose and fulfillment. But it also just means that there are certain parts of ourselves that we don't really want to look at. And with that sun being there, it's almost like being forced to look at it. But I think what's more important to indicate is where your moon is. So like we said, your moon is in Libra, which is, I think, a beautiful placement as far as like being that mediator of life. But you have it in your 12th house, which the 12th house, I think, is one of the more intense houses. There are 12 houses. So it's the last one. And it has a lot to do with what's in the subconscious. And it has to do with our shadow world a lot. So if you ever are embarking in shadow work, which I feel like you kind of hinted at or alluded to, having your moon there, which is your emotional world, is going to be a really, really, really deep, profound experience to have in relation to how you identify by your emotions, right? So the moon being in the 10th house means you feel very deeply. There's a lot of intuitive and psychic ability, but it also means that you can drown in your own mistakes, in your own louder voices, in the ways that maybe you hold yourself back simply because of fear or anxiety or just like subconscious dread. But you also have your Mars right there. So that can also be indicative of sometimes when our Mars is in our 12th house, it has to do with like a weird relationship with anger, either not feeling like your anger can be properly expressed or that it's expressed in a way that's unhealthy. So a big, not obstacle to overcome, but rather like something to be intentional about when moving forward in life is, what is my relationship with anger? And is my anger, because it's next to that moon in that 12th house, anger and emotion, what's their relationship? And how can I make sure that I'm actually intentional with expressing my anger through communication? Does that, yeah, it looks like it makes sense.
Oh my gosh. No, if I thought you blew my mind before, this is, I mean, you hadn't even touched anything until now.
Yeah.
And I never mentioned anything to you about anger, but the fact I classify my past actions or my past personality. I've been an extremely angry young man. My whole youth was spent in anger.
Yeah.
And which then turned into something that only recently have I realized a lot of the interactions I've had with people have been a direct response to my coming at them from anger, even though I'm not angry at them. My motivation in the way that I'm communicating with someone came from an anger inside myself.
Yeah.
So I'm having to change that, actively having to change that. And that's probably the hardest thing in the world to do, because it's been such a big part of me my entire life. So
I know.
nobody knows that. So for you to bring that out, my gosh, I can't even believe.
Well, I do want to say that, so Venus rules our divine feminine, you know, Mars rules our divine masculine. So having, you know, how we express our divine masculine in a house that is so subconscious, that is so hidden, that can sort of like rumble to the surface, it's indicative of the fact that, you know, anger isn't necessarily something that's so innate in you, but rather it's a product of not really maybe being able to have a healthy relationship with developing your divine masculine. So I think a way to sort of like, not mend that, but to find, make amends with it, would be to, you know, have a conversation with yourself in terms of like, you know, how does my divine masculine want to be expressed? How does this like an innate work drive, sex drive, way of expressing myself within the masculine realm? How can I channel that healthfully and not, you know, sort of project it, spew it, or let it be emotionally led and let it go, you know, rabid. But yeah, I was kind of like, I was like, yeah, let's talk about the pretty things. But yeah, the thing is, our charts are everything. And they're so indicative of not only just who we are, but how a lot of our circumstances have molded us, right? You know, having Venus and Jupiter in the 10th house also means that there's a really, I would say, an intricate relationship with like paternal figures in your life and just like men in typical. So it would make a lot of sense why a lot of different things like that would sort of develop. I think it's beautiful because it also shows you, okay, like what can I be more intentional with working on, and what are my strengths, and how can I, you know, magnetize those a bit more, you know?
Honestly, a little overwhelming. I'm glad we're recording this, because I'm going to have to listen to it a couple of times to really let it all sink in. That's a lot of information that you just got off of a birthday and a place of birth and a time of birth. I mean, that's amazing. That's really astounding.
My favorite thing in the world. I do a lot of things, and one of my favorites is just to read people's charts, because we always leave a session. I feel so intimately connected to every person that I read the chart of, because there's a sense of vulnerability that you kind of have to forfeit. And there's also a sense of connection that you always inevitably feel. I see so much of myself in you and in every person that I've been able to read, because I think it connects us deeper when we realize, you know, that we're products of this earth, and there is no separation between universe and human. It's all one. And so why wouldn't we be ruled by this universe that we are made up of? It seems easy to me. But yeah, it's so much information that you can pull. And I would encourage anyone to look into their charts and just see what they find out about themselves, for sure.
Yeah. And you do this for people on a regular basis. So if somebody was interested in reaching out to you to get their chart, and also if you go to your website, you can see all the different things that you do. And it's really astounding. We didn't even talk about spiritual.
We didn't need to.
There's a lot that you do. Honestly, I'd love to have you back on the show because we have so much more to talk about, and maybe get some other people's birth dates and see what we can find. If someone wanted to reach out to you to get one of these done, what's the best way for them to do so?
Oh, yes, totally. Well, that would mean the absolute world to me. You can visit me on Instagram at Jasmine Kylene, JazminKylene, or visit my website by the same name.com. And I do natal chart readings. I also do spiritual counseling. I do workshops. I do a lot of things, but I just think it's such a beautiful way to feel more deeply connected to not only to yourself, but to each other. So I'm always available.
The energies that come from you, it's very nurturing, very lovely, really wonderful, very relaxed and casual and comfortable. I can't recommend you enough. I mean, just these 44 minutes or so that we've been talking have given me so much information that I do plan on going back and revisiting. I've just learned an awful lot about me, which is a good and a bad thing, but maybe we should leave it here.
I don't want to get too intimate. Yeah.
but certainly if anyone's interested in reaching out to you, gosh, I can't even recommend it enough. This has been really wonderful.
Absolute
pleasure meeting you. And thank you for being open to coming and talking to me about this stuff. Because it's just fascinating.
Thank you for having me. It means the absolute world. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, listener, as I always do, because I do understand that there's lots and lots of content out there screaming to get your attention. And for whatever reason, you came to this show. And I'm super grateful and honored that you chose to listen to this one. Now, if this message has touched you, if you learned anything through our conversation, or you know one who would benefit from this information, please don't hesitate to share this with someone that you know, because to spread the message is really what we're here for. And if you came here and you're listening to this message, it's for a reason. So let's help other people that might have a reason to listen to this message get it. So if you'd like to learn more about my guests, we talked about her website and her Instagram. Both is Jasmine at Jasmine Kylene. It's JazminKylene. I'm going to lay in direct links to those in my show notes so you can just go to them and click on the links directly so it's easy. And as always, please don't forget you can send me a voice message on speakpipe.com/skeptic metaphysician. You know I love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your questions, your feedback on the show, the guests, anything. It's the only way that we're going to bring you the content that it's going to really energize you. So I also love sharing people's stories. Love to share yours too. So please feel free to reach out if you'd like to come on the show. You can join me on Facebook at The Skeptic Metaphysician. Links to my social media platforms and SpeakPipe access are all in the show notes as well. I do have an Instagram account under Skeptic Metaphysician that you can follow as well if you're interested. Well, that's all for now. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again in the next episode of The Skeptic Metaphysician. Until then, take care.